Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Lakers Collective. Lots of stuff going on around the team to talk about today. We'll talk about the newest Laker, Zaire Williams. We'll talk about whether this means Jonathan Kuminga is still on the way, what that could potentially look like. We'll take your questions, your comments. Oh, and we'll talk a little bit about Summer League as well. We've got Jovan Buha, Pete Zayas. I'm Trevor Lane. Happy to see you all here. If you haven't done so yet, hit the subscribe button on the YouTube channel. Follow us over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts as well. Guys, how are you doing? And Jovan, have you recovered from Vegas yet?
A little bit. My voice has come back. It's still a little raspy, but nothing like Summer League. The best time of the year. Was out there for 5 days, which I do not recommend for most people, but I had a good time.
Yeah, I think there's a 3-day rule on Vegas normally, right? Like after that point, it gets a little rough. I enjoyed it from my couch, had a blast watching that. But Trevor, you were out there too, man. You got a new nickname from Joey Buss, and hope you had a good time.
That was indeed fun. It was good being known as the player option guy out there in Las Vegas. That was fantastic. It was a good time. I did 3 days, and I'm still feeling it. I'm still feeling the Vegas experience. But you know what? I did the Zaire Williams over on Lakers Nation. I did the video for that from the airport. Like I'm uploading it as I'm stepping on the plane. I got all these comments saying Trevor, you look tired. What's going on? I said, man, if you don't leave Vegas looking tired, you did something wrong. Like that says you did not do Vegas correctly. So it was a blast out there at Summer League, and enjoyed meeting some of you out there. I heard a number of very positive things about Lakers Collective, as I'm sure Jovan, you did too.
Yeah, ton of positive things. Had the Buha's Block meetup, which was also great. Mm-hmm. I was happy to meet several of you guys out there. So it was a fun trip, and now ready to talk what the Lakers did this weekend.
So let's go to that. The Lakers do sign Zaire Williams. And this has been, you know, rumored for a little bit that he could potentially land in LA. They get him on a 1-year minimum deal to join the Lakers and add to that wing depth a little bit. Pete, what did you think about the signing for LA?
I think it's a good low risk, decently mid reward type of signing. He's a guy that's going to get, I think, more deflections than is necessarily a lock in at the point of attack type of defender. But at his size and length, he can switch a little bit. And I anticipate the Lakers still, especially with their bench groups, doing that a decent amount. And so between him and Cameron Carr, I think they'll block an unusual number of jumpers. That's something that Williams does pretty frequently. But I like it. He's young. I think the hope is on the offensive end. He does a little bit better from three with better shot creation around him. Hasn't played with a ton in the way of guys who really like to pass the ball. And so I think that's the hope there. But Jovan had a Vetman signing at 24 years old. Between all the other guys in this very fun Summer League team, I feel like they're kind of loading up on a bunch of young wings and hoping one or two of them can cash in.
Yeah, we like to make some fantasy football analogies on this show every so often. And to me, this is the tight end by committee approach from the Lakers of you don't get your stud tight end within the first 5-6 rounds of the draft. So you load up at the back end of the draft with two or three guys. You're hoping one of them pops in their situation. It feels like the Lakers are doing that with this elusive two-way wing that they've been looking for quite a while. So I really like the move. I think it makes a ton of sense. I think it also makes sense in the context of if the Lakers do clear out some of the back end roster stuff, like if he ends up being a little bit lower in the pecking order, maybe he ends up being behind a Cameron Carr or a Deuthirio, depending on how those guys continue to develop. If Zaire Williams is like your 11th or 12th guy, I like that much better than what the Lakers have had in that spot over the last few seasons. So whether he's actually a rotation guy or whether he's just some back end roster depth, I like it either way. In terms of his actual game, he's not a true two-way player, in my opinion, up to this point in his career. But I have talked about with the Lakers that they have often prioritized the offensive end and like hoped that the guy would develop defensively, where I think this is a situation where you see the defensive potential, you see the steal rate, the deflections, and the defensive playmaking that he has. I think he rates out at least as like a solid defender, if not even potentially a good defender, especially in a certain context. But the offensive end is where we've seen some development with his shot, some development with the finishing, getting to the free throw line, etc. So I think if they can refine some of his offensive offensive game and get him just an increase in shot quality and just him playing off of Luka and Austin and what that's going to do for him compared to what he was playing with in Brooklyn in terms of playmaking. Like I could see a more refined, more efficient version of him offensively, that he's living at the rim, he's living at the 3-point line, and then he's doing what he does defensively. And that version, especially for a guy in his mid-20s who's on a minimum contract, like it's hard to see any downside with that potential signing. So to me, it makes a ton of sense, especially if you know the Lakers continue to clear out the back end of the roster and make some additional moves.
This is the exact kind of player that I want to see them gamble on, right? If you're going to gamble on something, make it a wing with some size, some switchability defensively. If a guy like that hits, I think it's more meaningful than if it's a, you know, scoring guard, a small scoring guard that hits. You can do more things with a wing like Zaire Williams. And we don't know if he will hit, but I want as many bites at that apple as I can get. That's why you've got now Zaire Williams, Jake LaRavia, Du Thiro, or you can throw Jared Vanderbilt in that mix. The only thing that gives me a little bit of concern is that all the guys I just mentioned, they all have the same, but they need to do X. X is shoot. We don't know if a Du Thiro can shoot. We don't know if Zaire Williams can shoot. It's gotten better over the years. Will that continue to improve or not? Jake LaRavia, will he rediscover his shot? On and on. They have all these wings with all having question marks in the shooting category. But that said, the defense is already locked in with these guys. I like what they're all going to provide. These are high energy guys. These are guys that play with high motor. And that's something that I think is really critical with Luka and Austin Reeves. And now you just got to hope one or two of them have the ability to shoot the ball as the season goes on. And that would go a long way towards showing up the wing depth. None of these guys are the answer for the starting role, certainly. But in terms of just having depth on the wing, these are the kind of guys I like to see the Lakers taking chances on. So I know I've been fairly critical of the offseason so far. I have no complaints whatsoever on this move. On a veteran minimum contract, is the hit rate going to be very high? No, but if you're going to take that chance, I love that they're doing it here on a defensive wing. Pete, where do they go from here? Does this now lead us directly into like Jonathan Kuminga? Now all they have to do is find their starter. Are you happy with the rotation outside of that starting wing spot at this point?
Yeah, I'm pretty happy. I mean, there's still more work to do, but it wasn't going to be able to be all done this summer. But it's a yeah, but it's a big one, right? Like they need to fill that spot. I really believe, and hopefully, you know, Iman Shumpert was talking with Shams on his pod, and there was like, oh, didn't he sign with the Lakers? So you kind of hope and wonder, like, is it just a matter of time type of thing? But and I don't know what their backup plan is there, Jovan, if they don't get him. But yeah, I think Kuminga is the logical next step. But if they don't hit on that, like, it has, I think, a domino effect on the rest of the roster where you've got somebody starting in that spot. I think it would probably be Jake starting at the other forward just for having another defensive forward type of thing. I know people have Mamu sort of projected in that spot, if not, but I think they'd go with the defender there instead. But that's going to come with issues. Jake, I don't think Jake's a starter in you know, on a good team. And so, yeah, if they don't fill that spot, you know, I have a different outlook on the offseason. But overall, like, if they are able to get Kuminga, I think I'd be very happy with this offseason.
Yeah, I'm totally with you, Pete. I've been talking about that on here, that I think people are penciling in Mamu as the starter when I think it's going to be Jake. I think Mamu is going to be the primary backup 4-5. Yes. If you look at it right now, it's like, technically, if you're doing the depth chart, which I did last night, I'm going to be doing an episode soon here on it, with like three guys at each spot. I have Mamu as the backup 5 penciled in with Looney as the third string guy, but it's really Mamu as the backup 4 and 5. Like, technically I have Vando as the backup 4, but I think Mamu will be ahead of him in the rotation and he'll get most of his minutes at the backup 4 and 5. They'll run probably more of like a 9-man rotation. And then Vando is more of like that fringe guy, is like the 10th guy. But if you look at spots 11 through 15, which again, just roughly here, it's by like third string at the position, in order from point guard through center, it's Bronny, it's Jaden Hardy, it's Dalton Connect, it's Adu, it's Kevon Looney. I don't have confidence in any of those guys popping as a rotation guy this upcoming season. Adu is obviously the one where we've seen how he's progressed at Summer League, and he's the outlier there potentially, where maybe he does pop and he is in that top 9 or 10. But with the exception of Adu, I'm fairly confident that if we're looking at like the context of playing OKC or San Antonio, I don't see Bronny, Hardy, Dalton, or Kevon Looney really factoring into a potential series. So that's where if you do get the Kuminga and end up flipping one or two of those guys, and now you have, you know, Zaire or Vando slotted kind of more in that third string, that's where I think your depth makes a lot more sense. And I really like that roster construction more. So whether it's Kuminga, whether it's PJ Washington, whether it's someone that we just aren't talking about or isn't on our radar, if the Lakers can find that starting level player that rearranges the bench rotation and kind of slots a second tier bench guy into like a third tier spot, that to me would be a real win for the Lakers.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Like, that's, you kind of have that challenge right now where we're in the same spot of when we were last year, where you've got too many guys right now that you wouldn't project to be real rotation players. And unfortunately, because the way injuries are occurring in the NBA, you know, there's going to be situations where those guys need to. You also, you know, with the Jovan, with the list that you just gave us there, that's including Jared Vanderbilt in the rotation player column there, which we know JJ Redick would probably prefer not to do. Now, I hope Jared Vanderbilt bounces back. I hope he becomes the defensive player that he used to be. I'm just not holding my breath that it's going to happen. So if you are able to go get that starting level wing, and if you do so by clearing out some of those deeper bench positions, that would go a long way towards increasing the overall quality of this roster. In fact, I think it would make a bigger step up than necessarily just the individual player would suggest if you're able to restructure things in terms of how this roster is laid out. So if it is a Kuminga, if it is a PJ Washington, and you remove some of those end of the bench guys in order to make that happen as the outgoing salary match, again, like Jovan was saying, that slots everybody much better on this roster. And that's where I think you've really got something here at that point. I like Kevon Looney as the third string guy. I could even see a scenario where Looney is almost like the fourth guy. Like, if they trade a couple of players in order to go get, say, a Jonathan Kuminga, and then you go fill in another big somehow onto this bench, I could see something like that potentially working out for them as well. I just don't have Looney as like a night in, night out guy. He's more the grizzled veteran on the end of the bench, trying to give a team somebody other than Austin Reeves as their oldest player. And I think that's what his arrival is all about.
I think he's Maxi Kleber, or like that's what his role should be. He's the spiritual successor to Maxi Kleber on this team.
He's better.
We'll come in at the end of games to set screens.
Exactly. There you go.
In other words, we're going to have a moment this next season where Mamu is going to be on the bench and Kevon Looney is going to be in, and the Lakers need a three, and everybody's going to lose their minds.
It's inevitable.
It's happening. All right, everybody. We do need to talk about Jonathan Kuminga. Is he even the right fit for the Lakers? Is that the direction they should go, or is that just the only option for them right now? We're going to get to that, but first, a quick shout out to our sponsor, and that is Prize Picks. You guys can check them out. Use the link in the description down below. The code, it's HMA. Play $5, get $50 instantly over on Prize Picks. Super easy. All you got to do is pick more or less than some of your favorite players. We do have England versus Argentina coming up soon. And we got about 40 minutes till that's going to happen. Harry Kane, I'm going to say he gets at least one shot on target. And then Leo Messi, I'm saying he scores a goal because that's what Leo Messi does. You guys want to get in on it, use the link in the description down below. That code, it's HMA. Play $5, get $50 instantly. All right, let's talk a little bit about Jonathan Kuminga, because obviously there's that Iman Shumpert thing. Shams saying it hasn't happened yet. Was that just a slip of the tongue, or was that an indication something is coming here? Pete, how would you feel knowing that it has to be at least a three-year contract, mm-hmm. and now given the cap situation, a straight signing Jonathan Kuminga is out the window. Now it would have to be a sign and trade. So need to be at least a three-year contract. You can have non-guaranteed years on that. But to me, if you are signing and trading for Jonathan Kuminga, effectively you are saying you're the guy. You're the guy we want for the future alongside Luka. How do you feel about that?
I feel good about it at a certain price point that I think is where we would be talking. He fits into the whole idea of the rest of the offseason. I talked with somebody with the team on Friday last week, and I don't know if you guys heard Austin on the Dan Patrick show talking about how he was in communication with Rob Pelinka and his people, talking mm-hmm. about how, like, we want to build a team that's not just competitive this year, but 5, 6, 7 years down the line. I think that's a little bit longer than how it actually works in the NBA, but at the very least, I know that they wanted to have a team of guys where they expect that player to be very good on the 28-29 team, just as they are on this year's team. And so with the exception of Jackson Hayes, everybody who left between Kennard is 30, Marcus is 32, will be 33 in the middle of this season. And I asked about him a little bit, and their thought is like, they think they got a little bit lucky with how many games that he played. And they think that there's some physical issues, but through that framework of like, are you going to be still good in 3 years? Because we want to keep you around. Like, they want to build something, you know, and they want something that's long-term-ish, as long-term as you get in the NBA, where they can kind of go to war with this group of guys and then add to it going on. And Kuminga's 23. For all of the talk about, you know, the how things went in Golden State and had a cup of coffee in Atlanta, like, he's still very talented at a position of need. I think that he's a peanut butter and jelly fit with a guy like Luka. That, and even if it doesn't work out, yes, it needs to be a 3-year contract, but you know, Trevor, that it can be a non-guaranteed in the third year. There's ways you can finagle that to like,
it's going to be a player option. So we know it.
Yes, most likely. Right. But they want
to, well, it has to be 3 years. It cannot have a player option within the 3 years. So that's I'm one kidding. Caveat right. okay. with that. So it could be like a 3+1. It would have to be, but I also don't think he's agree. I'll just say this. I would be shocked if he agrees to a non-guaranteed. Like, I think it's going to be, if they do a sign and trade, at least 3 years, if not the 3+1 with the player option, and it's going to be full guaranteed, not non-guaranteed.
And if we're talking around MLE type of money, like, yeah, that, and that fits with the rest of what they did. Like, what, Grimes is 25, Sexton and Mamu are 27. You know, like, they're trying to build that younger type of roster, and he fits right into that.
I think the question in that we could now kind of reframe this with is, so you have Austin Reeves taking this $5 million pay cut, right? And the dip starts year two. You have Mamu, who has a dip in year two as well. And my understanding coming out of this weekend with the Lakers and their approach is like, they are looking at next summer with the use of that potential non-taxpayer MLE, which starts at around $16 million. Like, that's something that they have targeted. If they add Jonathan Kuminga, they are effectively going to lose that. There are technically ways they could rearrange their cap sheet, maybe dump some money at the deadline or the summer, you know, depending on where Vando's at in all this. But realistically, if they add Kuminga, that is functionally their non-taxpayer mid-level exception addition now rather than next summer. So I would flip it back to you guys of just, how do you feel about that? Like, you get the guy now instead of waiting a full season with an incomplete roster without that starting level forward / wing, and you get the guy now versus next summer. But I would also look at, you know, it's Lu Dort, Max Strus, Derek Jones Jr. Like, those guys are also on the older side a little bit compared to what the Lakers are looking at, especially in the case of Strus and DJJ. So, like, how do you, you know, Max Christie is another one that could be out there, but how do you feel about the options next summer versus getting Kuminga now and kind of Kuminga versus some of those guys?
Yeah, I like the concept. It's the same concept as what we call pre-agency, right? Which is going after players at the trade deadline that you would otherwise use your cap space on in the summer, going and getting them it right then and there, like the Jazz did it kind of with Jaren Jackson Jr. And we've seen teams do that over the years. I like that conceptually for the Lakers. Now, if you're telling me it's only the older guys that the Lakers think they realistically have a shot at for next summer, then yeah, go ahead and go grab a Jonathan Kuminga. But I've got significant concerns about Kuminga. I want super high motor players around Luka. I don't know that that's exactly what Kuminga is. I think he is still a theoretical player more so than an actual player. And on a team that already has so many question marks, I would rather see somebody that is more solidified there. That said, if it's Jonathan Kuminga, or I'm going to get an older player like a Jonathan Kuminga right now, or I got to go through this season with Jake LaRavia as my starter next to Luka, and maybe get a Lu Dort or somebody next summer, I think I'd rather take Jonathan Kuminga right now than that. However, that name Max Christie pops up, and boy, that Pete, that just tugs at the heartstrings a little bit, doesn't it?
It sure does, man. He was tough to watch him go. It was great. It's funny that day that Luka was, that we traded for Luka. Remember, that was like, he was so good in that Knicks game. And that game was just so fun. It was one of the funnest games of the season, and just the whiplash of all of that. Now, he also comes with a certain degree of like ball handling and processing stuff that I'm like, I think I'd still go with Kuminga because he's that bigger body. It's more of a position of need, I believe. Now, I do think we need that point of attack defender, and he's good at that, but he's not good enough at that and in other aspects of the game to want to sort of punt a year on hoping that we could get him back. I don't know, Yovan, if you feel similarly about him, but I also think that with all of these contracts, like, these guys are decently tradable at the price points that they're at, and it doesn't have to be they're married forever to Jonathan Kuminga if it doesn't work out. Now, I do think he'd still have a market. Maybe that's foolish of me, but it sounds like he had, you know, has some interest from Cleveland and a couple of other teams. But yeah, that's where I'm at on that. Like, give me Kuminga now. But I get where you're coming from, Trevor, on the motor stuff and all of that. It is certainly a bit of a risk.
I think if we're talking Max specifically, he to me is more of the Grimes replacement and slotting Grimes as a six man, as that point of attack slash smaller wing defender, whereas they would still have that general big forward, big wing hole in the starting group that they could potentially fill with Jonathan Kuminga. So I almost view those two as separate. Dort, Strus, DJJ, varying degrees of defensive flexibility there. And some of those guys, I think, are better at guarding up. Some of those guys are better at guarding down. So I think those guys have a little bit, maybe more utility than Max in terms of just being a bit bigger, a bit able to handle some of the bigger wings and forwards. But I think with Christie versus Kuminga in particular, I just almost view them as different defensive roles. And I think Christie would be more so the guy slotting in between Luka and Austin offensively, kind of taking the Grimes role of just spot up and then defend the best 1-3 player. I would say with
100%.
Yeah. So I would say with Kuminga, though, it comes down to cost. So if it is a 3-year deal or 3+1, 4-year deal, whatever it ends up being, what's the overall AAV and what are you sending in the trade? Are you unloading your 3 seconds and your swap, or are you able to retain half of those assets? Are you able to retain 3 of the 4 assets? Like, what does the potential trade look like? So it's difficult to say. The Vando plus a swap never really passed the smell test to me, just based on my understanding of Vando's market right now. And that always felt a bit low to me in terms of draft capital to attach to Vando. But if you could get Kuminga at, like, let's say 3 years, $45 million, $15 million AAV, that's roughly non-taxpayer MLE money, that or below, I think I'm in. When you go above that and start approaching the $20 million or you know, 17 to 19, that's where I have a little bit of pause. Not saying I'm out at that price point, but I would have some reservations.
Yeah, I agree. I think the price point on the contract is going to matter a ton. What you have to give up in order to get him, of course, obviously matters too. Plus, you know, big picture. Look, the Lakers said, Walker Kessler, you're the guy. If we have to overpay a little bit to get him, we're going to overpay a little bit to go get him because you're the guy. How do the Lakers see Jonathan Kuminga? Is he the guy that they want their long-term? Because that's also going to be something that matters in this. Right now, he is the guy that's available and probably the best available option that's not a, you know, a PJ Washington, Derek Jones Jr., something like that, a guy that seems to be really, truly out there on the market. But there are still concerns with him. It's a high upside swing, but I think given the options that we're discussing here, as long as the price is right, I'd rather have that swing and go into the season with that position filled than go into yet another season saying, well, this is the team and maybe they can add something at the trade deadline that'll fill this hole that they've got. I'd like to see them for the first time in years go into a season saying, no, we've got our group. We're ready to go. Maybe we make a minor change at the trade deadline or something like that, but let's get these guys out on the floor and start developing chemistry from day one.
What do you guys think of the whole idea of a Lakers youth movement that we're not interested in role players whose age starts with a 3? We want somebody that's going to be as good on the 2028-29 team as they are this year, if not better. Like, that takes some good players off the table. We were lamenting, you know, Marcus leaving, Kelly Oubre's 31. There's some good players there at decent prices. But what do you guys think about that whole idea that that's not where the Lakers are looking?
It's a good question. And this is something that I spoke with several Lakers people this weekend in just, hey, how did the offseason go? What did you think of it? And I think I wouldn't say the consensus opinion, but more often than not, there was an acknowledgement that we might have taken a slight step back this season. Like, you could argue that on paper we don't have the same top end talent. We lost LeBron. Like, we lost good players in Marcus and Rui and Luke, and we understand that, like, why some people are down on the offseason, why some people feel like we've taken a step back. But this is about the longer term vision here with, you know, building this core from the ground up around Luka and Austin, having these guys in their mid to late 20s all growing together and, like, building out the next, to Pete's earlier point, like, next, you know, 3 to 5 years or so with this core. So I think through that lens, I think it makes a ton of sense. I think if you were looking at it through, like, the myopic, we need to win a championship this season, build right. the best possible roster for this season, I think that's obviously not the case. But if you're looking at, okay, I think this season we can still be a 50-plus win team. We can be a home court advantage team. We can make at least the second round and then build off of that next summer and see what trades or moves we need to make, continue to swap in some pieces. And then 2027, 2028, we feel like with a year under our belt, a successful season in terms of 50-plus wins, second-plus round, we can be a true contender on the level with OKC or San Antonio, or at least be in that conversation. So I think if you're looking at it through, like, a 2 to 3 year build and where they'll be at some point between 2027, 2028, like, I think that makes a ton of sense. Obviously, if the goal was, like, to try to win this season, I think they are kind of splitting the baby there, so to speak, a little bit between the present and the future.
So on the Jonathan Kuminga front then, is this a, you want to have the, as Rob Pelinka would say, the optionality to go at a different player potentially with the non-taxpayer mid-level next summer? Or would you rather have Jonathan Kuminga now? That's, you know, it's not accidental that the contracts are structured the way they are. It does appear that they really want to have the ability to go spend on the market next summer with that non-taxpayer mid-level. If Jonathan Kuminga is sitting right there, what are the chances that you find somebody that's better? Is this a, you know, a bird in the hand better than two in the bush mm-hmm. situation? So I don't know, Pete, what would you choose if you were to pick between Jonathan Kuminga or the options for next summer?
I'm not fluent enough in who's a free agent next year and who will be available for that non-taxpayer MLE. But my instinct is that under this idea of a Lakers youth movement, we'd be hoping for a talented 23-year-olds to be on the market that we could add mm-hmm. to the team. So I am of that mind of Jovana, like, sign Kuminga now. And if it doesn't work out, you know, you can pivot. And that's true of all of these guys. But, like, let's build something, get these guys as many reps together as possible.
That's where I think I am too. I am pro Kuminga in the context of, like, just looking at the Lakers situation. I think it does make a significant difference here in terms of, like, we were talking about the rotation earlier. If Kuminga slots in at that 4 spot, and your starting group is Kessler, Kuminga, Grimes, Austin, Luka, and then now your bench group is Sexton and Mamu and Cameron Carr, Jake LaRavia, maybe Adu ends up going in there as well, Zaire Williams. Like, that top 10-11, I like that, right?
Yeah.
And I think that makes a ton more sense. And instead of slotting Jake as a starter when he's more of a bench guy, instead of playing Mamu in there and going more like the talent play, but now your front court is Luka, Mamu, and Kessler defensively, which is just, I mean, there's some size there, there's some rebounding, but that's pretty slow and I think pretty limited from a scheme perspective. It would, to me, honestly, be some of the overlap with, like, Luka and Rui and why that, like, I think Mamu is a better defender than Rui, but I think in terms of guarding wings, Rui's a better defender in that specific ask compared to Mamu. So, like, just the foot speed there, the athleticism would be at such a deficit that I think that would be problematic. So if you can slot Mamu as that backup 4-5, slot Jake as a bench wing, and add in a starter, like, that to me is a no-brainer.
Agreed. Right there with you guys on that front. We'll see if the Lakers can ultimately get that done or not. We do need to talk a little bit about the Summer League squad, which apparently will never, ever lose again. Mm-hmm. They're playing some very, very fun basketball. Let's talk a little bit about them. Then we'll get into our chat questions and comments. Jovan, let's start with you. The Lakers just continue to roll. Who do you want to start with? Who do you want to talk about from this Summer League team?
I think we have to start with Cameron Carr. That, to me, has been the biggest story of all, because this was the guy that the Lakers took in the first round this past draft. They traded up to get him. And I think it's been a home run pick so far, right? Like already we were projecting him as one of the steals of the draft based on where he was projected and where he ended up slipping to. But that has played out here in a meaningful way in Summer League. And I think it's not just been Las Vegas. It's because some of the guys I think have looked better in Vegas compared to San Francisco. Some of the guys look better in San Francisco compared to Las Vegas. I think Cameron Carr has looked great the entire time. And even when he's had maybe a couple stretches here or there where he's had some stinkers or like a rough quarter, rough half, he immediately bounces back. It does not phase him. And I've just really liked his problem solving offensively, where he just feels like a guy who has nearly every tool in his toolkit. And if you're going to go under, he's going to rise up and hit the jumper over you. If you're going to overplay, he's going to back cut you. He can attack on and off the ball, and the athleticism, the decision-making, that all really stands out in a big way. So to me, he already, like I'm penciling him in as a rotation guy as of right now. I think he's going to be at least a 12 to 15 minute a night rotation guy, which the Lakers have not had in a rookie in quite a while. So to me, I mean, I've been joking about it, like go back to last week, like he might be the seventh best Laker right now. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's insane. He might be the seventh best Laker. And so I don't know if that'll be like day one, he's seventh man, but I think he'll be at least like ninth man and have a real shot to play his way into a bigger role. So I've been incredibly impressed with him.
You know, one thing we talk about is three-level scoring, the value of having a three-level scorer. And one of the things that's been so exciting about him is he's running a lot of actions that I see him running for the parent club, in that he's starting on the left side of the court as a right-handed player coming off of a screen. And as Jovan laid out, he can come off of that. And if you're not locking and trailing on that and you can get some separation, he elevates quickly, and he elevates so high that he can get a clean look out. And that's a very easy shot for him. If you do lock and trail off of that, he can pull up from mid-range. He's hit some beautiful pull-up mid-range jumpers and the floater, which a lot of guys at his age have either or, but not both. He's able to hit both of those. Then if you don't defend the rim, he can get all the way to the rack and has had several and ones off of that. Then in the Clippers game, they missed him. I call these theoretical lobs because they haven't actually completed them yet, but the Clippers top locked the Lakers more than any other team has, which means on that shooter that's off of the ball, you don't let him use the screen. But what that does is it lets the back cut become more available. Mm-hmm. You do that against Cameron Carr and you got Luka on the floor, or even Austin, like those are going to be some fun lobs that, like, that's the four things that you need to be able to do. Like Kobe used to always talk about the value of like move and counter move. That's all you need in any, but you need it in a bunch of different situations, right? And so the situations that he's being run in, that these are NBA level like type of sets. He's not just being the on ball guy because he's the best dude on the Summer League team. Trevor, he's coming off of screens and he's able to score and produce at every single level. That I think projects super well going forward.
And I think even defensively, we're seeing moments where the wingspan is just causing problems for offensive players. Like he's getting to spots faster than people are expecting him to. He's reaching shots. He's blocking shots on the perimeter. He's blocking shots at the rim. Those long arms are making a big, big difference for him. But I'll tell you what I really love, though. It's the fight that you see in him, right? All we've heard from Carr himself, as well as everybody else, is, oh, he's too skinny. Right? He needs to put on weight. He needs to put on muscle. So what have teams been trying to do? They've been trying to get extra physical with him, and it's not really bothering him that much. He's saying, come on, bring it on. There are moments where he gets bumped, but it's not because he doesn't have the fight in him. He is more than happy to play that physical style. And that is, I think, really encouraging when we think about what he can be long-term when he does put on the proverbial 10 to 15 pounds of muscle. Not that he's going to do it this summer, but what he can eventually become. You know, guys, it brings me to our whole conversation about Jonathan Kuminga, our whole conversation about who is the fifth guy, right? If it's Grimes, it's Luka, it's Austin, it's Walker Kessler. Who is the fifth guy? Right now, that guy isn't really there. Do they need to go get Jonathan Kuminga? Long-term, the answer may very well be Cameron Carr, as certainly at least, if not the guy at that slot, but one of the guys in the starting five with the Lakers. Again, I wouldn't put him there immediately, but at some point that appears to be in his future. But let me ask you guys this, because I got this question a little bit in Vegas. Everybody I talked to, very, very excited about Cameron Carr. From talking to a few fans, though, there was a little bit of hesitation on, well, Dalton Knecht looked really good at a point two, and that didn't work out. Jovan, what gives you confidence that Cameron Carr's game is more real than the flashes that we saw from Dalton Knecht in terms of sustainability?
I think it's a fair point. I would say defensively, I don't think they're close, right? That was a major question with Dalton coming in, that I mean, he just didn't have, like, Kamen can be better defensively. I think that the fundamentals, the techniques, some of those things can be sharper and refined, and they'll work on that with him throughout the season. But there's a level of just his rim protection or him closing out at the three-point line. I mean, I think he's blocked the three-pointer in basically every game, unless there's one I'm forgetting. Like, there's just a level of that that Dalton never had defensively, even going back to his rookie summer league. So I think there's a defensive floor and ceiling that I think he has flashed that Dalton was just never in that same ballpark. I think there is a higher level of processing with Cameron Carr, just in terms of reading the defense. I think there's more variety within his moves, his counters, his ability to score at all three levels. I think he's a better finisher at the rim through contact and just dunk it on your head or some of the back doors with the lobs. Like Dalton was a high level 3-point shooter, and Dalton did have a high level pull up mid range game, right? Like I think that might actually be even better right now for him than like his 3-point shot is. I think he's really good at attacking the closeout or coming off of a screen and hitting one dribble pull up. Like he can do that at a high level, but I just think there's a bit more variety within Cameron Carr's offensive repertoire. And then defensively, I don't think it's close between them. Again, like Carr still far from a finished product on that end, but I think Dalton has always been a minus defender and has not really progressed on that end, where Carr, at least to me, projects to have average upside at a minimum, if not like become eventually a pretty good defender.
Totally agree with all of that. And one of the things on top of that is, how good are you at the main thing you're supposed to be good at? And one of the things people, I think, overestimated with Dalton a little bit is his movement shooting. He was much more effective in college, even as a spot-up shooter or with the ball in his hands, hitting a pull-up or attacking a closeout type of thing. But that exact sequence that I was describing earlier of coming off of the screen and raising up off of movement, Dalton, when he'd get hot, he would hit that shot. But that's just a natural part of Carr's diet in the first place. So I think he's a better shooter than Dalton was. I think Dalton was more of an overall scorer who's an underrated athlete in his own. He's got good size. He can, you know, get to the rack and he could dunk on you a bit too, but he doesn't have any elite measurables like Carr's standing reach and wingspan and all of that. And I agree with the processing point as well. So, but at the end of the day, like, you get onto the court as a young player as being really good at the thing that you're supposed to be good at in the first place. And I think Dalton is a little lacking in terms of as a movement shooter in ways that I think Carr's a little bit better. How did you respond when those fans asked you that, Trev?
I said basically what you guys have been talking about in terms of the defensive side of the ball, that being something that I think is significantly better than what we saw from Dalton Connect. Also, the interviews, frankly, when I talked to Cameron Carr and we're asking him, you know, what kind of things are you working on and everything, man, that kid's got it. He knows exactly what he needs to do. And I never quite got that sense from Dalton Connect that he knows exactly what he needs to do in order to take that next step. Cameron Carr, you can tell he is the son of an NBA player. Mm-hmm. He's been through this process before. He's been around this situation. Cameron Carr, that kid is sharp. He gets it. He knows exactly what he needs to do. And so I'm really encouraged about what he's seeing out there on the floor, his path moving forward, and where he's ultimately going to be. But I'll tell you, the other guy that's been impressive has been Adu Thiro. Obviously, the athleticism pops. There have been times where he's gotten out of control. That first game of the California Classic was a disaster. He was just holding down the turbo button the whole time. But since then, you can see it. You can almost see him thinking on the floor, slow down, because when he does, good things tend to happen. Now, the shot has not come around at this point, but he's making some plays out there on the floor as well. Are we coming out of Summer League? If Summer League were to end right now, obviously we have more games, but if we were to end right now, would you come out of this Summer League process feeling like Adu Thiro has taken a bit of a step forward here, or where are you at on him?
I would. Yeah. That's something that from that first game until now, you know, he went 5 of 6 from the field in last night's game. And he was just trying to get every possible opportunity that he had. But there have been so many drive and kicks where even if he doesn't get the assist off of it, he is driving with aggression. He's getting fouled a ton, which is often a sign that a player is way too athletic for their competition. But when he's not getting fouled, like, he fired a left-handed bullet out to the weak side corner on a drive and kick in last night's game. That was like, man, when you got somebody with that much power that can pass with either hand and can keep the blender going, even when they're not a shooter, that's been the one thing, Jovan, is that he hasn't knocked down his 3-point shot, but He's getting to the rack and he's still keeping the wheel going in ways where on the other end too, remember Redick told him, hey, we want you to be a point of attack guy. This is a, you know, we talk about Kuminga and having a bigger forward that can guard. Ideally, a Duke can fill that role. And he takes a lot of chances. I view him more as like a havoc creator than a true point of attack type of guy like Mannion, who I'd love to talk about in a moment. But yeah, he's really making a lot of plays on that end of the court as well. And then you get out into transition, and then it's all the super fun stuff that, you know, we all know about a dude. But there's just been a growing maturity to his game that players just need reps. Like, how often did he actually get to play last year? That I just think this experience is just super valuable for him.
I love what I've seen from Adu, and I would say right now I'm penciling in Vando as the backup four, or, you know, backup four behind Mamu, right, with him playing both roles. But Adu might just straight up take it from him, because I think if he can have a similar level of impact in terms of motor, rebounding, defense, the offensive end, what we've seen from Adu, I just think is at a different level from what we've seen from Vando, right? With, I mean, just simply like the catching and finishing around the basket and some of the patience and the head fakes and stuff that he has, still the ability to, you know, get an and one or lift up and just dunk on you if you jump at a pump fake and he's got the you know, space to jump, like he will dunk on your head or draw a foul there. Vando cannot do that. Some of the stuff with the back cutting and the lobs, and then also him attacking the closeout and him some of the playmaking, driving kick reads, or just him getting to the rim, finishing, drawing fouls. Like I think the shot is the biggest thing with him, which I think will ultimately determine whether he could be a starting level player or not, assuming that he continues to stay healthy and refine his game on both ends. But putting the shot to the side, as long as he continues to do some of these things that it's like, all right, if you play off me, I can drive and use that runway to get into the paint, get to the rim. I can make some of the correct reads in terms of the driving kicks, and my decision-making continues to progress. Like, that alone to me should make him a rotation player just with his physical gifts. Like, he is one of the most athletic players in the NBA straight up. And you look at the combination of speed, verticality, power, like there are not many guys like he has like superstar athleticism. I don't think that's obviously going to be his future, but if he could just do the rebounding, the defense, and the finishing at a high enough level, that I think automatically makes him a rotation guy. That is just a matter of his ceiling will be determined by his shot. So I've loved what I've seen from him.
Yeah, a few games ago, Coach Abbott was talking about how they prepared Adu for teams collapsing on him in the paint, and you could see it in the game when he's getting into the paint and he's locating that kick out pass for open threes. Doing a great job there. You mentioned the athleticism. I instantly think of the game in the California Classic that went to that double overtime, or that sudden death period, when they tried that lob play for that he got fouled on.
Fouled, yeah.
Oh my God, when they high pointed that ball, when you freeze it, he was so high up there. I mean, it doesn't look real the way this guy can just absolutely sky. So physical, so strong. Love the way that he plays. Just, you know, stay healthy. There's so much Crash Wallace to his game. It's like, man, just please stay healthy out there, Adu Thiro. But I've liked a lot of what we've seen out of him. Pete, you wanted to talk a little bit about Chris Mannion, the defensive wonder out there on the floor. Already has a NBA skill set on the defensive side of the ball. What's his future? Is he an NBA player?
Yes, he's an NBA player that he's improved as a finisher and getting to the rack. I love the first play of yesterday's game. So I don't know if you guys have watched Wogler a whole ton, but he pinged on my radar. I'm like, I don't know if he's, we'll see. First play after the jump ball, Mannion gets right up in his jersey, knocks the ball away, forces, I think, what ended up being an 8-second violation. It's a turnover. But then on the next play, he gets the ball in the corner and a very crafty, like, racks the closeout, right, left step. And it's hard for a right-handed finisher to go right, left, and then finish on the left-hand side. But he does that with no problem on that side of the basket. And then, you know, knocks down a couple of spot-up threes, hits one in transition. That we talk so much about three-point shooting, Jovan, as being this very important skill, and it is. But I do think that for a player like him that can really heat up the ball as much as he does, you only have to get to a certain level. Like, you don't have to be you didn't need to become a 38% three-point shooter to become a legit NBA player, but he's improved. What I was concerned about last year is that he also wasn't finishing that well around the rim. And I do want to see him against NBA talent, because whenever I saw him on the court against NBA players, I'd be like, he's a little smaller than I wish he were, but on those guards and that can handle the ball, man, he really knows what he's doing. And I think he's very close.
Love the defense. Think that is clearly NBA level. I would say he's got this unique offensive game where he almost reminds me of slow-mo a little bit. Like he kind of moves at his own pace on drives, and he's also like hunched over a little bit as well. He doesn't have like the best posture on drives. So I just feel like he's got like a quirky dribble drive game where he's almost moving at a different speed than everyone else, and guys are kind of passing by him and he's just, you know, laying it in. But yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing, is like with the way the game has shifted, it is really difficult to be a backcourt player who can't shoot at a certain baseline level. I think we've really seen that change over the last few years, where if you're not close to a league average shooter in like conference finals, you basically get played off the floor, even if you are an elite defender. So I think that the key for him will be, can he get to being a consistent, at least 33, if not 34% three-point shooter? If he can be, I mean, and that's below league average, but if he could be roughly in that like 34%, I think the defense is good enough to be on an NBA roster and potentially be a back-end rotation guy. If it goes even higher, now we're talking about a guy who's a legit 3-and-D guard, and I think he could have some more utility there. But I'm with Pete in the terms of, I just don't know how his offensive game will actually translate at the NBA level. I'd like to see that in training camp and the preseason. But so far, I think there's been some real tangible progress with him, and I am bullish on his fit, either as a roster player or at least for now as a two-way guy.
Yeah, you need guys who can defend the way he can. If he can just get to average from three, that goes such a long way for him. And I love that when you ask him, like, hey, you know, who do you pattern your game after? You get Jrue Holiday, you get Alex Caruso, like that's perfect. That is exactly what you're looking to see out of him. He's got a very good sense of what it is that's going to get him in the league and keep him in the league. So he's definitely a guy to keep an eye on. I don't think he's at risk of losing his two-way spot at all. No. If anything, maybe he gets bumped up to a full roster spot if they have a spot open. Right now, they do not. But from there, that brings us to the final thing I want to talk about here with the Summer League squad before we get to our questions coming in from the chat. Arthur Kaluma has been pretty impressive. What's going to happen with him? Are the Lakers going to lose him? Can they open up a spot? Pete, where do you see this going?
You got to give him one of the other two ways. I would give him Suter's two way in that whole idea of the load up on tight ends in the back end, Trev, but yeah, he's been phenomenal. Just feels like he's shooting true shooting. I saw his like PER, which isn't a great stat, but it's like 39 point something. It's just off the charts. He's knocking down every shot, competing on the boards, right? Trev, you always go last on these, and I feel bad about that. So forgive me, Jovan. I'm going to swing the ball back to Trevor on this.
Swing it.
You got to
swing
you got
that to see MF-er. Close.
Swing that MF. Yeah, sometimes you got to
swing MF-er, right? That's right.
You got to see him up close, man. That just a super fun performance, and he's contributing in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, he's been absolutely fantastic. I love the way that he can put the ball on the floor and attack the basket. I've got a lot of Lakers fans saying, "Oh, he's like the light version of Naz Reid or something like that." Let's not go crazy with him here, but he's shooting the hell out of the ball. When we asked him about it, he talked about that was after the 34-point game. He talked about, you know, hey, I got hot in this game, but he's focusing on the other things that he's doing. Specifically, the concern that I've had with him is at 6'7". He moves more like a four, but he's not power forward size. He's a bit of an undersized four, or you could say he's a three that's a little bit too slow for the position. So we asked him, like, hey, what have you been working on? Where do you think your game has grown the most? He said, my foot speed. He said, I've been really working on my foot speed. Also, this is kind of a little funny aside. He goes out there. He drops 34 points. He comes walking over to us in the scrum. And the first thing he says is he makes a comment about how nervous he is to talk to us. We're like, dude, you just dropped 34 points out there. You're lighting up, shooting it from half court. And he's afraid to come over and talk to the press. But very humble guy. And is really shooting the ball well right now. And like we said, load up on wings. This is a guy who, if the foot speed continues to improve, maybe he really becomes something. And on top of that, he came through the South Bay Lakers last year. Now they're going to be the Coachella Valley Lakers. So he's been in the program for a year now. This is the kind of guy you want to reward. I would be giving him Suter's spot yesterday, right? I mean, I'm not messing around with this. Here's what's going to happen. If the Lakers don't, somebody else will. Yep. Somebody else is going to give him that spot. And if I'm the Lakers, I don't want to let go of a wing talent like that. I mean, Jovan, I'm assuming you're of similar thought, but what did you notice about him from seeing him up close?
I echo everything you guys said. I would say the thing with him is we were just talking about how most of these two-way players that the Lakers are trying to cultivate here lean more defensive than offensive, with the exception of Cameron Carr. I think Kaluma's another one of those guys who leans offensive rather than defensive, and the questions are more so his defense at the NBA level and his overall athleticism in just physical tools profile. But assuming that, though, like he has bulked up a bit over the last 12, 18 months, put on some muscle, and assuming that I do view him more as a four than a three at this stage. He's a little bit of an undersized four, and that's fine in a bench context. And if you're going to shoot 38-40%, obviously he's shooting above that, but like trying to extrapolate it into an NBA context, like if he can be a 38%, 40% 3-point shooter and give you just a solid level of rebounding, defense, and just strength there at that four spot in a bench context, like that could be a useful two-way guy. So I do view him as more of a two-way guy than a roster player, but I do think there is roster player upside with him. Again, if he shoots like 45%, obviously we're having like a different conversation here, but I just really liked what we've seen from him and really the shot drive decision-making, right? Mm-hmm. If you're going to get like,
very smart,
he will let it fly. If he has a sliver of space, he will let it fly, which I think speaks to what the Lakers are trying to cultivate here with more three-point volume, even if it's not necessarily like the best shots. But then if you close out aggressively, he will attack the closeout, get into the paint, and finish. And he's been several and-ones, getting to the free throw line a ton. Like I've really liked that shot drive decision-making from him.
He's got that long stride that allows him to kind of slither to the rim. When you think that he's getting walled off, next thing you know, he sneaks by the defender and he gets to the rim, and he's got the ability to finish there. But certainly been a bright spot for the Lakers, and I hope they do manage to hang on to him here. All right, we are going to get into our chat questions and comments here for the final segment of the show. But first, a quick shout out to our sponsor, and that is Factor. We're going to pause for just a moment to give a shout out to our sponsor, Factor. Lakers fans, life gets busy and finding time to plan, shop for, and cook a good meal isn't always easy. That's where Factor comes in. Factor delivers fresh, never frozen meals straight to your door. They're fully prepared, ready in just 2 minutes, and designed to make eating well much more convenient. With a wide variety of rotating meals and options for different nutrition goals, Factor makes it easier to stay on track without spending hours in the kitchen. I especially like that I can keep a few meals ready for busy days when I don't have time to cook or order something. And personally, I really like that they have a lot of high protein options as well. So if you're into working out, you can check out Factor and get your protein needs met there. There's no grocery shopping, no meal prep, barely any cleanup. Just heat it up, enjoy it, and get back to your day. I use Factor and you should too. Head to factormeals.com/LakersPod50off and use code LakersPod50off to get 50% off and free daily greens per box with a new subscription only while supplies last until September 27th, 2026. See website for more details. Thank you again to Factor for sponsoring today's show. All right. And big shout out to Factor, obviously. That was from Las Vegas that I threw together that read. All right. Let's get into some of the questions and comments coming in here from the chat. This is kind of a funny one. Why are we always trying to put NBA players inside of vacuums? They must get really dusty or something. I have leaned on that phrase quite a bit recently. I've noticed. I don't know about you guys, but I definitely have.
It's funny how we all have our like crutch phrases and words. Yep. And yeah.
I would just say, I think when I use that, or I think when other people use it, the goal is to like, we can evaluate a player in a vacuum where you're just looking at their specific skill set, capabilities, mm-hmm. their production, whatever. And then there's also within a team context. So that's where, we could pick a random player. Like if you pick like Mamu, right? Like I really like Mamu. I love the signing, but in the context of him, I think there are teams he could be a starting four on. The context of the Lakers starting group, I think there are some limitations with him as a starting four. So that's where there's like the in the vacuum of what you think about the player, isolated from circumstance, context, situation, etc. And then there's actually factoring in the context situation. Rui was another one where it was like, Rui can't start for certain teams, but on this team with what they need from that position, it's just not good enough defensively. And so I think that's where you can isolate a player individually and compliment them and like certain things about their game. But then when you factor it into the big picture of the team context, the lineups, the rotation, that's where some of the nuance, I think, could potentially shave away some of the things you actually do like about them.
No, that's a great way of putting it. Like, basketball is so contextual, and it's almost like cooking a meal, right? Mm-hmm. We had just had the factory ad. Like, there are sometimes where it's like, does this need sugar or does it need salt? And if you choose the wrong one, you could really mess up whatever it is that you're making. Doesn't mean that either sugar or salt are bad in a vacuum, right? But the context of everything it matters a lot in basketball.
Well, Pete, that is actually a perfect segue into our next question here. It says, love the show. Must admit, Pete joining the show got me to officially subscribe. Well, let me say, everybody, follow BG the Kid here and hit that subscribe button if you've not done so yet. Did Pelinka cook?
Thank you.
Thank you for your attention to this matter. Pete, did Pelinka cook?
I think Pelinka is cooking. I think that there's still more meal to make, and I think it's going to take a decent amount of time, but we needed to get Kessler. That's the thing I keep landing on, Jovan, is like they needed to square away that spot. But between that and then if you look at the Summer League roster, this is the most excited I've been about the development system of the Lakers in a few years, really since Austin and Max in 21-22, was that? So like it's pretty cool to see the organization being built up. So I think he is cooking, but not all the way done.
Agreed. I have nothing really to add. Like they got the main dish. They nailed the main dish with Walker Kessler. We can debate whether we like the dessert options or whether we like the appetizers. But the big thing with this offseason was they needed the main dish coming out of it. I think they landed that. And then again, the roster to me is not finished yet. So we'll the next week or two have a better sense of where they're at, and we can finalize how great the meal is.
All right, Julian says, would you guys trade Vando, Dalton Connect, Jake LaRavia, the swap and seconds for PJ Washington? Then Bronny to whoever LeBron goes to for a second, fill out the rest with veteran minimums. Maybe Arthur gets a full roster spot opening up, increase the floor. So Vando, negative value, you're moving off that. Maybe it costs you the swap plus just to move Vando. So in that sense, if you're talking about Jake LaRavia and maybe a second or two plus Dalton Connect to... is at best what maybe neutral value, maybe eye of the beholder type thing. I mean, just from a value perspective, I'm probably doing this because I think it costs you swap plus just to get off of Vando.
Yeah, I probably would as well. Yeah. I guess one question though, one thing I know they want to do in the next couple of transaction cycles is get like right up to the second apron. And you can't both be a $50 million cap space team at the beginning of the summer and be bumping up against the second apron at the end of the summer. So that's part of the reason for, hey, if we can preserve the non-taxpayer MLE, but between the exceptions, whether it's that or the taxpayer MLE, plus I think they have the biannual exception next year. And then so long as they're under the first apron, they can take back more salary than they send out in a lot of trades, that I know they want to add salary and then the talent that goes along with that. So that is one thing that I think that those back end, the Vando, DK, LaRavia type of guys, I think the whole idea is to go from where they're at is around $200 million in salary. And then I think the second apron is going to be 233-ish next season to try to like... by next summer or at the very latest next trade deadline, trade those guys and get salary back. And then that plus exception sort of getting up to the second apron. So I do know that they value those guys as salary ballast in a way, but I'd do that trade.
Yeah.
I almost view this as I know there's obviously more to it, but I view it functionally within the actual rotation as just Jake for PJ. I don't think Dalton is going to factor into the rotation. And I think Vando is more of a fringe guy, especially with the Dew coming on. So if you look at it through that lens, just swapping Jake for PJ, I think that's a no brainer. You're not technically giving up a first round pick. You're giving up a swap, but that might not even convey. You get your guy locked in for the next 4 years. And then next summer, if you do move off some additional money, you could still potentially open up that non-taxpayer MLE. And I think it just puts you in a much better spot with this year's group compared to the possibility of Jake or Mamu starting.
Yeah, and I know we've said this before, but I'd be more excited about this group with PJ Washington than Jonathan Kuminga. I would definitely pick this route if that was a choice. Laker Boy said, because of Trevor and Jovan, I gained courage to start my journey of being an analyst and a Laker creator on X. Would love to connect for any advice. And then he also said, love the show. If Carr gains 5 to 10 pounds, would you like him to start? I love him next to Luka and Austin Reeves in the starting lineup with Grimes off the bench. Well, first of all, thank you and excellent work getting going on all of that. Always, you know, follow your dreams and do all that sort of stuff. Certainly we'll help out in any way that we can. As far as Carr in the starting lineup, guys, on a conceptually, like, unless we're talking about a very high draft pick, my preference is usually to bring rookies along more slowly, let them get their legs under them, and then build upon success. Whereas if you just kind of throw him in the deep end, that can be a tough starting off point in the NBA. It's different if we're talking about like a Cam Boozer or somebody like that. That's a very high draft pick and expected to immediately slot into a starting role in a bad team. On a Lakers team that expects to be good, I'd rather see a rookie be brought off the bench initially and then earn that starting role if that's warranted, rather than be immediately inserted into a starting five, even if he does put on 10 pounds of muscle between now and the beginning of the season.
Yeah, I think it's unlikely that he surpasses Quentin Grimes in the pecking order. Quentin Grimes has a relationship with JJ. He has a relationship with Luka. He was the Lakers' second biggest addition of the offseason up to this point. They do view him as that starting point of attack caliber defender. So I think if anything, again, it's that fifth starter spot or the forward spot where they're looking to make the change, which maybe that ends up being Cameron Carr and they play Luka more at the four. And then you have Carr, Grimes, and Austin as your three perimeter guys, or you're a bit small there. You're a bit undersized on the glass, but I see that being more realistic of, they don't love Mamu in the starting group. Jake is underperforming. The shot's not there. Okay, do we turn to Cameron Carr? Do we turn to Adu Thiro? Something like that. More so than Grimes. I think Grimes right now is locked in as the fourth starter.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I'm of a similar point of view as you, Trevor. Like, I want, for one, the rookie to experience some degree of success first. And then if he enters the starting lineup, it's because he kicked the door down. Right. It's because he's so damn good that you can't deny it and you can't keep him off of that. And so I think going up against bench players, too, is part of the way that you get to a degree of success that I think Carr will be a starter in the NBA in the not too distant future. But especially even if he's adds 5 to 10 pounds, he's still pretty undersized. And in a vacuum, maybe he could start at the two or the three on a team that, like the Pistons, that's got all these big physical perimeter defenders, things like that. But if you're talking like Austin, Grimes, Carr as your 1, 2, 3, that's not a lot of weight and strength between the three of them. So for me, like, let him kick the door down, let him get some success first in some other areas, but he's going to get there.
All right, let's go to this question. Shabugan said, do you buy this Shump and Shams spoiled the Kuminga trade is done story going around? Feels like wish casting to me. I'm assuming you guys saw that, but if you read the text that's going around and the description of the conversation, it comes across a little different to me than if you actually watch the clip. To me, I think we're reading too far into things to have this be this gotcha, aha, they accidentally revealed that the trade is secretly done already type situation. I didn't get that feel for it watching the clip.
We can often forget that not everybody follows this stuff as crazy detail by detail, day by day. And so I think that from Shumpert's point of view, it was like, I've been hearing all this Lakers Kuminga stuff. Did that happen yet? I agree that it's different written than if you saw it. I just think he wasn't sure.
I also think we'll have a better sense when LeBron makes his decision, right? Yes. If he goes to Cleveland, then Jonathan Kuminga's not going there. And I think it's increased likelihood he ends up with the Lakers. If LeBron goes elsewhere, then I think there's more competition.
Mm. Yep. This one said, Vando and a first round pick swap for Kuminga on a 3+1 starting at $19 million. Hardy can be traded, not aggregated for Goga. Okay, Goga Bitadze. Sign and trade Spencer Jones starting at 5.6 on a 3+1 for second round picks and connect to a third team for apron space. So I guess, first of all, if it is Kuminga and you got to give him a 4-year deal, player option at the end of it, let's call that for a swap, but he starts at $19.9 million. Are you willing to do that?
I think it's a little high for me.
Yeah, likewise. And then Goga was in my trade machine until one fateful day. You guys remember what he said about Luka's family?
Yeah.
I think that probably takes him off of the Lakers list of, I think this person has very good taste in players. Goga's a good defensive backup, backup five, and Spencer Jones would be an excellent defensive wing. But yeah, I think the Goga dream died the way when he, you know, insulted Luka's entire family. We'll see.
I'd go after Spencer Jones, though. And if you look at the way that Denver has been moving with the draft, and they brought over the, I think Diallo, it was the EuroLeague defensive player of the year, it looks like I think they're going to keep Aiden Watson, but Spencer Jones might be a casualty of just their cap reality there. So if he's available, I would take him by far over any of the 11 to 15 guys on this roster. So I think he'd be a no-brainer. I mean, he might even be a candidate to start, honestly, based on I think the past season he had.
Do you think he's a Kuminga alternative?
I think he could be.
Mm. Yeah, maybe a cheaper option.
You'd have to, I mean, at that, yeah, I guess it depends on the context of, you would have to do a trade with them, right? Like, it wouldn't, I don't think, I mean, maybe he signs for the minimum. Maybe that's his market and he gets kind of squeezed with RFA, just the nature of it. But I think he's better than a minimum player.
Mm-hmm. Any chance we can get Kawhi if the contract is voided? I mean, any chance? Sure. If he is forbidden to re-sign with the Clippers and really doesn't want to leave LA, sure, but other teams will be able to offer more money unless the Lakers do something dramatic to clear cap space or something of that effect. But we're talking about a world where, like, he can't do a sign and trade with the Clippers and he's just got to go sign for, you know, a mid-level or something like that. Then the Lakers are very limited right now to just being able to offer a veteran minimum, and that would be that. Mm-hmm. It would be a good way to punish the Clippers, though, wouldn't it?
I think he ends up in Toronto if the contract gets voided. Yeah. I think he just signs a minimum there.
Yeah.
Why is Polinka so against PJ? He's a perfect fit. Jovan, you and I have talked about this a little bit. It's a bit confusing. And when you gave out 4-year contracts, why they are against a 4-year contract for PJ? Watch, like, why stop now? That's the confusing part of all this.
He's about to be 28. So I think he's a little bit on the older side based on this, I guess, build, right? Like, all the other guys are 27 or younger. So, I mean, we're talking about a year difference here. It's not like he's 30 or 31 or whatever with the 4-year deal. I would say, I mean, he is coming off a down year. Now, my counter to that would be, look at the roster he was playing with, and they didn't have a functional point guard for most of the season. And so a guy who is more of a finisher than a creator, who is going to be living off of the shots that their point guard / primary ball handler playmaker are creating, are just, like, it's going to have an impact on a guy like him. I don't think people holding this past season against him, I don't think that's necessarily fair within the context of who he is and who he's been. There are, like, it's a big contract. You could look at some of the shooting stuff has not been as consistent as you would want. But I think comparing him to Kuminga, for example, there is a proof of concept of him as a starter on a team going to a finals team. And I think there's role acceptance. Like, that's my biggest question with Kuminga, is just, even now, I think we saw with DA. Go back to DA's first press conference. DA said, I'm here to screen. I'm here to roll. I'm here to play hard. I'm here to do all the dirty work. And, like, I don't care if I don't take shots. I don't care if I'm not featured offensively. 2 months into the season, he's complaining about the Clint Capella role. And, like, I think overall, he met the moment for what the Lakers needed, especially in that financial context. But Kuminga, we're talking about a multi-year deal. You're talking about double, if not almost like 2.5 times the amount of money that DA was making. And he's also 4 years younger than DA. Like, he hasn't been kicked in the face as much as DA was up until that point, where, like, I think Kuminga still believes in a certain vision and ceiling for himself. So I think that's still my biggest thing with the Kuminga versus PJ thing, is even if you think Kuminga's better, certainly has more talent, higher offensive ceiling, I see that. It's just, is he going to accept playing off of the ball like 80% of the time? This is not going to be, you get your post-ups, you get your ISOs at the elbow. Like, that's not how the Lakers offense is going to function. Are you willing to spot up and cut and be a transition threat? And that's like 80%+ of your offense. If so, then, you know, the Lakers could use you. If not, then I think he's in for a rude awakening.
Yeah, that's pretty much where I stand. Like, I do wonder, you know, Jovan, you make the point that you think that if the Lakers and Dallas make a trade, that Dallas would have to win that trade on some level. So like, what would
be neutral,
cost?
But yeah.
Yeah. Or at least
the optics matter. I think the optics matter.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I do wonder like what the cost would be. But the best I could come up with was that like, yeah, he's going to be 28 to start the year, but like Mamu's 27, you know, Sexton, he didn't sign the 4-year deal, but Sexton's 27. Like, is there really that big of a difference? And like you said, there's that proof of concept. And if you've got to sign Kuminga to that 3-year deal that we're worried about, Trev, like, why not just go that extra step and go with the guy that where you know that he can not only fill that role, but he will accept filling that role in ways that it's a big time question with Kuminga.
I really think I said this earlier today on a radio appearance. I think Jonathan Kuminga needs the Lakers as much as the Lakers need Jonathan Kuminga. I think it's time for him to take that step in his career. Is he ready for that? I don't know. And that's got to be a big factor in whether or not the Lakers ultimately do pursue him and try to get a deal done. But I know we've got other stuff that we all need to run off to. So we'll wrap things up there. I've saved the Super Chat questions. We will add them to our next show. But I do want to thank everybody for joining us. Please make sure you hit the subscribe button if you've not done so yet. Pete, Jovan, always a treat talking Lakers basketball with both of you.
Yeah, I missed you guys. It had been too long.
Yeah.
That's
right.
Let's
do it again.
For sure.
Let's do it again soon.
All right, everybody. Till next time. See ya. And stay safe.